offering our pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Welcome, dear listeners, to this session of Vahini Satsang. So as we have been discussing in the last few sessions, we are in the last chapter of Prema Vahini, and this is a long chapter. Bhagwan is so beautifully summarizing for us everything that he has written till now. And we have crossed more than 100 sessions of discussions on Prema Vahini. If I'm not wrong, this is the 102nd session of Vahini Satsang since we started many, many weeks ago, with this whole objective of contemplating and dwelling on the message of Bhagwan. The Vahinis are those secret texts which the avatar himself penned month after month for the Ashram monthly magazine, which he himself started on Shivratri way back in 1958. Prema Vahini was the first series that Bhagwan wrote. It was message of the Lord, direct from the Divine. And it has been our opportunity to dwell on these profound writings of the avatar. Perhaps never before it has happened in any avatar that the avatar himself wrote down his message for mankind. We are indeed blessed and really grateful to him that we are continuing this session. So let's listen to this 14th segment of chapter 30. And we're really grateful to Bhagwan that for this session we have with us Brother Sonam Gyamso. Probably many in Sai fraternity are already familiar with him. He's a former student of Bhagwan's university and also someone who is very deeply engaged in the bhajan movement, in the Sai bhajan movement, and someone who has contemplated on his teachings and has such beautiful reflections and insights to share. So today we will be blessed with his experiences and his ruminations on Prema Vahini. So let's begin listening to what Bhagwan has written in this 14th segment of chapter 30.
బాధపడి ప్రయోజనం లేదు, నిరుత్సాహమునకు సమయం కాదు, బలము లేదనుట మానవధర్మము కాదు. కావున వేరు మార్గము వెతుకక భగవత్ ప్రార్థనలకు పరోపకారములకు అన్యోన్యతతో ప్రయత్నించుడు, నిదానించుడు, త్వరలో సంతోషమును ఆరగింతురు. లోకమున మానవసేవే మాధవసేవ అనుచుందురు. అది నిజమే. ప్రజాసేవ పవిత్రమైన కార్యమైనను సత్వస్తువగు దైవములో కలియువరకు గొప్ప సేవచే జనులకు శక్తి కలుగజాలదు. ఏ కార్యము చేసినను దైవచింతనను తోడుగైకొని మానవునియందు మాధవత్వము ఉన్నదని గ్రహించి మానవసేవే మాధవసేవ అన్నచో సత్యమగును కాని కేవలం అట్టి భావము విశ్వాసమే లేక వారి వారి పేరు ప్రతిష్టలకు సంఘ గౌరవములకు తత్ఫలితమును కోరి మానవసేవ చేస్తూ మానవసేవే మాధవసేవ అన్నచో ఎట్లగును? మాధవ చింతనే లేక మాధవసేవ ఎక్కడ ఉట్టిపడును? అవి బూటకపు మాటలు, అది నేనొప్పను. దైవచింతనతో, సత్యమార్గముతో, ధర్మగుణముతో ఏ కార్యము చేసినను భగవత్సేవగా భావించవలెను. పేరు గౌరవము తత్ఫలితము ఆశకొరకు చేయు సేవ మాధవసేవ అనబడదు. అట్టి నిరంతర దైవధ్యాన పరులైన వారు ఇతరమైన కార్యము ఏమియున్నూ చేయనక్కరలేదు. వారి ప్రార్థనాఫలమే లోకమును పావనము చేయును. అయితే నిరంతరం ధ్యేయాకారమగు ధ్యానములో నిలుచుటకు అందరికీ సాధ్యమైన పని కాదు. కనుక అట్టి స్థితిని పొందుటకు విశుద్ధాంతఃకరణము కలిగి సర్వసంకల్పమును నశింపచేసుకునవలెను. అట్టి మనోధర్మము కలిగిన సాధువులు స్వయంగా కనుగొనగలరు. అంతియే కాని అందరికీ సాధ్యము కాదు. కాదని ఉరక ఉండకూడదు. అది మీమీ ప్రాప్తానుసారం సాధనానుసారం లభించును. అంతవరకు ఆత్మవంచనలేక ఎంతవరకు మనస్సు వృత్తిరహితమై దైవాకారముగు స్థితిలో నిలుచునో అంతవరకు ధ్యాన జపములు చేయుచు పరోపకారము చేస్తూ తత్ఫలితమును ఆశించక లోకసేవలో కాలమును వినియోగించిన ధన్యాత్ములు కాగలరు. అట్లు కానిచో దేహముతో ప్రపంచకర్మలు చేయకపోయినను మనస్సు లోకమున పోయి అనేక కర్మలు చేయుచుండును. అట్టివారు కర్మలు చేయకనే కర్మమునకు కట్టుబడుదురు. దైవధ్యానము సత్యమార్గములో నుండి మనస్సు బహిర్గతమగునప్పుడు ప్రాణికోట్లకు ఉపకారమగు పనులు దేహేంద్రియములు చేసినను మనస్సు దానిపై ఏకాగ్రతతో పడి ఉండుటచేత కర్మము చేసినను కర్మము చేయనివాడగును. భగవద్గీత భావమంతయు దీనిపై ఆధారపడినది.
Worrying is fruitless. This is no occasion for despair. It is against the essential nature of man to plead weakness. Therefore, giving up the search for other means, in a spirit of brotherhood, men must collectively take to the path of prayer and service to others and be patient. Then soon one will experience happiness. People say that service to man is service to God. This is true. Service to society may be a sacred task. However, even if it is a big endeavor, unless it is sublimated with divine feelings, it will not serve the purpose of empowering mankind. Whatever task one may undertake, if it is done with the full awareness of the understanding that there is divinity residing in every being, only then it lives up to the dictum, Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. Instead, if service is done bereft of such divine feelings and performed only for the sake of name and fame and with an eye on the resultant rewards thereof, how can that Manava Seva be termed as Madhava Seva? When there is no thought at all of the divine, how can it ever be Madhava Seva? It is fake service which does not have any approval. Whatever activity you may be engaged in, if it is done suffused with divine thoughts, is on the path of truth and has the fragrance of righteousness, then it automatically becomes service to God. On the other hand, if it is done with selfish interests of self-aggrandizement, then it can never be service to God. In fact, people who are ceaselessly in contemplation of the divine have no necessity to be engaged in any activity. The merit of their prayers will itself purify the world. Nevertheless, it is not everyone's cup of tea to be of this type. To reach such a state, one must have conquered all kinds of desires and completely purified one's inner self. Such exalted minds will be able to realize themselves. This is not possible for everyone. However, just because this is not possible, one must not sit quiet. Progress on this path depends on what you have gathered in terms of merits and the current effort being put in. Until that happens, to the extent you are able to calm the wavering nature of the mind, to that extent, engage in meditation and chanting of the name with utmost sincerity. Additionally, devote your time in the service of others, expecting nothing in return. This is how you can become blessed. Otherwise, even if the body is not engaged in any particular task, the mind will busy itself with multifarious worldly activities. Such people get entangled in karma, even though they have seemingly not done anything. On the other hand, when one's mind is fixed on the contemplation of the Lord and is engaged in the pursuit of truth, then even if the body and the senses are busy in the acts of service to the world, they will not accumulate any karma. In fact, even though one is engaged in karma, he or she will be a non-doer. The entire spirit of Bhagavad Gita is based on this principle.
I think there is so much back there, isn't it? When you have a Bhagwan begins by saying that to conquer your weakness, if there is anything called weakness in you, you can embolden yourself through prayer and service to others. That is a way to strengthen yourself, to service to others. And then he goes on to then say that, but then service, for it to be really service in its truest sense, should become the sadhana. And when service does not have any spiritual moorings, then it no more lives up to the epithet of being called service. And then Bhagwan moves on to say that if you are really someone who is so engrossed in the divine that your thought process is completely in tune with the divine, then whatever you do automatically is something which is service, which is beyond the attachments of the world. You no longer are bound by the karmic cycle if you are at that state. But to reach that state, again Swami says, service is the way to reach that state. Yeah. And I think in the end, when Bhagwan is telling this is the entire spirit of the Bhagavad Gita, I think that is something very, very profound. In fact, I was reminded of one instance that Swami used to narrate in his discourses about service, how there was this rich man who wanted to donate fans for a school, and then he wanted that, you know, his name should be there on the blades of the fan. So he had his name written on the fan blades. And then after a few days, you know, he went to the institution to check if they have installed the fans. Then he went to one classroom, and then he saw that the fan is on and all the students are enjoying the breeze. And he looked up, and to his utter horror, he saw that his name is not to be seen because the fan is rotating. People cannot read his name. He said, what is this happening?
Such a beautiful example.
Right, absolutely.
Most profound.
So, you know, the beauty is, here Swami is talking about seva, and in a broader sense, karma as such.
Yes.
Because action and seva, you're sanctifying action with the spirit of service.
Yes.
And there is this beautiful insight that Swami has given in the fifth chapter of the Gita Vahini,
mm-hmm.
where Swami says, the world over, the scholars are interpreting the shloka in a wrong way. He says, karmanyevadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. And Swami says, if there are no fruits for action, mm-hmm. Krishna should have said, na phaleshu kadachana.
Yeah.
Why did he say, ma phaleshu? He said, karmanyevad, you have the right to do your action, but na phaleshu, there are no results.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's like, you are hungry, you have food, your hunger may not be satisfied. Then why? So Swami says, it is not possible.
Mm.
It is not possible to do.
Every action has to have its...
It will have its reaction.
Yeah.
It will have the result.
Yes.
So when you are doing an action, you are aware that there is a reaction, there is a result of your action.
Yeah.
But you have a choice.
Yes.
So there Swami says, then Krishna says, ma phaleshu kadachana. Don't take that as your own fruit of action.
Yes.
Don't own that fruit of action.
Hmm.
So you can offer that fruit of action to the Lord and, you know, then be free of the results of your action.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Listening to this beautiful teaching of Bhagwan, like, what comes to my mind is, you know, he starts with this, in this particular segment, he starts with a very mundane universal experience of every human being, that is worry.
Worrying is...
Hari, worry, kari.
Yes. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
But then I remember on so many occasions, whenever we used to enact dramas and Swami would come and during one of the occasions Swami inserted a dialogue, and he said that you must say, what is the shape of worry?
Uh-huh.
And then the answer should be, Worry is nothing but mentally constructed imagination.
Mm. Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Mentally created fear, yes. Swami has told, yes. at several other. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Right.
So that is worry. Mm. So starting from worry to the point of saying that disowning the fruits of your action, mm-hmm. and saying that I am not the doer, relinquishing the doership, which is the ultimate panacea for the end of all worries. And so it's so significant.
The thing is, Swami in this paragraph is giving different levels. Yeah. You know, it's almost like a gradation.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
There's almost like a gradation. Largely, if you look at it as two levels.
Yeah.
See, one level, he says, the great people who have already achieved that kind of an experience, who have already reached that kind of a state, where their prayer is enough to sustain this world.
Yes.
Their prayer,
yes.
is itself so powerful,
yes.
that it is, that it will have its impact. And Swami has told elsewhere also that the best way to live my the best way to share my teachings, teach my teachings,
yes.
is to live it.
Yes.
So if you, the moment you live it, and your constant, your existence itself is like a prayer.
Yes.
So that is at that level. And then Swami compassionately says that all cannot reach that level.
Yes.
And that is a very exalted state.
Yes.
And possibly you can aspire to be there.
Yes. Once you are there, in fact, if you are in that in that state,
yes,
then you don't need to do anything.
Now, he says, in that state, every action,
yes,
whatever, you don't need to do anything,
yeah.
but whatever you do is spontaneous.
Yeah. Yes.
That every action becomes selfless, and that karma also doesn't stick to you, because
yeah. because you are no more the doer.
You are in everything happens through you from that state of being.
Nimitta matra,
this thing.
Yes.
And the other state is where Swami gives guidelines of how you can do, you know, sadhana. You can do penance. You can control your mind. You can purify your mind so that you are able to reach that state of giving up the fruits of actions.
And Swami is also saying, just because there is an exalted state and it looks like an impossible thing for you to attain, you can't just say that, you know, that is not my
goal. I won't do anything.
So it's very clear, you cannot simply sit quiet. Swami says, you know, you have to, as I think, if you remember, in the very first perhaps chapter of Premani, Swami says, for every person,
right,
one thing that should be a part of everyone's life is sadhana. I mean, there cannot be a human being to say that I'm a human being and he's not doing any sadhana.
Not doing any sadhana. Yeah, that's the crux of the karma yoga, that we are all the time steeped in karma.
Yes.
There's no other alternative.
Yes.
So when I was looking at this paragraph, one way of understanding, see, I don't know whether this is right or not right, Brother Sonam, you should guide us.
Yes, yes.
No, you are
the senior most here.
But the moment you said that, you know, I see levels. In fact, that's what came to my, that thought crossed my mind.
Yes.
I was thinking, like this is almost like, you know, the dependent origination.
Right.
Pratitya Samutpada of Buddhism, of Mahadevic philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And you would definitely agree with me that one relates to the other,
right.
one, you know, and it relates to the other one.
Correct.
So starting right from worry, and then worry is a weakness.
Worry is a weakness, yes.
And then why do we really get steeped in weakness when you have the inner potential for self-realization?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. See, so the two stages that I was seeing here, see, both are seva. Now, Swami is saying that such people who have reached that state of exalted being, they alone understand the meaning of Manav Seva is Madhav Seva. That's what Swami is saying here. So, I have divided it, just for my understanding,
yeah.
into two words. The exalted state of service is to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the aspiring state of service is to do.
To do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So you start with doing.
Yes.
And then you reach a state of being.
Yes.
So when you are in that state of being, like for example, Bhagwan himself, he is always in that state of,
yes.
you know, complete realization. He is the master. He is the Lord. But he never sat silent for 1 second. Mm-hmm. Always doing action, always doing work, always doing karma, always doing seva, always doing. But if you look at that, it happens spontaneously. And that is where that beautiful quote of Swami says, duty with love is desirable.
Yes.
Love with duty, love without duty is deplorable.
Deplorable.
But duty without love without duty is
divine.
Is divine. So that love, just that love is the only driving force. So that is the state of being. So a person who is in that state, everything happens spontaneously. It's not that they are inactive, but their actions are not coming from the mind.
Yes.
But then those who are aspiring, that to we are like some of us are in the do stage. So that we think we have to do something.
Yes.
We think that we have to. Ultimate analysis and the truth is everything is done through you.
Yes.
But in our ignorance, we believe we have to do.
Yes.
So what we have to do is we have to remove that ignorance.
Yes.
And that removal of ignorance can be done by seeing God in others, by seeing, doing Nishkama Karma, as Swami has been saying. So I was just reading a little bit about this, and there is a very nice passage from the book I Am That.
Mm-hmm.
By, Nisargadatta Maharaj, there is a question answer session.
Mm.
And his understanding of what help is, like, seva, service is help.
Yes. Yes.
So you are helping others. We all think we should help others, we should serve others. So he's definitely in the category of being. So let's see what he has to say about helping.
Mm.
He says, where action is needed, action happens.
Oh.
Man is not the actor. He is to be aware of what is going on. His very presence is action. The window is the absence of the wall, and it gives air and light because it is empty.
Mm.
He says, be empty of all mental content, of all imagination and effort, and the very absence of obstacles will cause reality to rush in. He says, if you are emotionally committed to helping, you will fail to help. You may be very busy and may be very pleased with your charitable nature, but not much will be done. A man is really helped when he is no longer in the need for help. So he says, the best help or the best service you can do to a person is take him to a state where he does not need help.
Yeah.
So this is such a beautiful explanation. He says, do not rush into activity when there is sorrow and suffering. Just look at it. Neither learning or action can really help. Be with the sorrow and lay bare its roots. Analyze it. So when he says analyze it, helping to understand is real help. So the service, the seva that he says you can do is just be. And take people to a state which is beyond the need for help.
So by your own precept and practice.
By your own. By being in that state.
Being in that state.
You are going to inspire.
Yeah.
But then if you look at the others aspiring, like the level where we feel we have to do. Here Swami has given a very beautiful and a sweet approach to this whole thing. In this book, Satya Sai Anandadai, a devotee asks Swami, Swami, what are the actions that should be done? And what are the actions that should be avoided for self-realization? See, now Swami is talking, yes, action, seva, service is all going towards that state of self-realization.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, then Swami says, if you have strength in the body and money in your purse, help others. See how beautifully Swami just brought it.
Pragmatic.
So practical and sweet. He says, if you have money and if you have strength in your body, help others. If you are weak and poor and cannot help others, don't harm others.
Yeah.
That is the biggest help.
That is the biggest help. If you do not have the strength to help anyone, stay quiet. Not wishing bad for others is help. See how many levels of help and seva service that don't find fault, since you can also make the same mistake.
Mm.
And then he gives, he goes to a very subtle point after this, which is very, very strange and very intriguing, because he says, In deep sleep, the mind is concentrated on God. The Jivatma becomes one with Paramatma. Try to get this during the meditation in the waking hours. So he says that, you know, the main thing that you have to do, the main thing that you have to do for self-realization is to be one with the Lord. Like just as your mind is absent when you are in deep sleep.
Yes.
You are doing that. Then he says, God is in the form of Sattva Guna. But do not believe in mesmerism. This is a very interesting perception because he says, do not believe in mesmerism. You know, don't get under the impression that the Lord is speaking to you through something. So the Lord is, you are getting close to the Lord. Means you are aspiring for self-realization. You want to do good for others, but not at the cost of integrity. So he says that, and very beautifully he says, don't get into mesmerism. Means even in an effort of trying to say, I want to help others, I want to do service to others, he says, don't fall for mesmerism. God is not that easily attainable. God is in the form of Sattva Guna, which will never enter the lowly things and talk.
Beautiful.
He says, man is 7 steps below God. Evil spirits are 6 steps. And they say, Swami says, the evil spirits are 1 step more powerful than man. And the power and the radiance of the Lord falls on all the levels. So because these evil spirits are 1 level higher than that of man, they even show themselves as God. They misguide human beings by showing themselves as God.
Create an illusion, sorry.
So he says, do not fall for these things.
Yeah.
Don't get mesmerized by these things. Means, you know, people have this strong, we want to help others. We want to do seva, we want to serve, we want to, you know, if only I could tell this person about what is good for him, what is not good for him. That you should do only by your precept of what you have followed and reached that state. Don't go for any of this mesmerism and these shortcuts. I think that's the message Swami is giving here.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, the most profound thing. Like, most of the time, Swami would tell us about stay away from ostentation.
Right.
Yes.
Showbiz, showmanship.
Correct.
Because that is one thing that will take you further away from your sadhana.
Yes.
From your goal.
Yes. Yeah, see, it's also a question of understanding. Because Swami has always said seva, service. But like he said here, what is that service? Understand that service. See, Swami has always said that when you are serving, don't think you are serving somebody else, you are serving yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
So what is the meaning of saying that you are serving yourself? So the idea is that same divinity which is in you is also present in everybody. That is the first level of understanding.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the second level and the deeper level of understanding is you are serving yourself.
Yeah, I remember there used to be one Colonel Sri Dharan, you remember?
Yes, yes.
His wife was a fantastic bhajan singer.
Singer, yes.
In Vrindavan group.
Yes, yes.
So during those days in Vrindavan, every morning when Swami would be in residence in Vrindavan, Colonel Sri Dharan would come with a small, beautifully made flower. I wouldn't call it a bouquet, but it was a flower that he would place at Swami's lotus feet. It was not just a flower plucked, but then it was a well-decorated, well-made flower bunch, I would say.
Like a bunch of flowers.
Yeah,
yes.
Bunch of flower, and then he would come and offer it to Swami. So on one of those days, Swami said, show karta hai, show. Then he said, no, he was almost in tears. He said, Swami, ye show nahi hai. It's an offering of myself to you. Swami said, okay. Does this give you any quantum of happiness?
Achcha.
Doing this?
Yeah.
So he said that, Swami, it gives me the highest satisfaction and happiness. Then Swami said, but then is plucking flowers and offering to me, is that enough? Because the flower that I demand from you is completely different. Then Swami said about the patram pushpam phalam toyam.
Right.
Explained it beautifully. And then he said that the flower that I expect from you is not this. This anyone can pluck and give it to me. That Hriday Pushpa should be offered to me. Are you ready to offer your heart to me? This reminds me again, so many thoughts come to you.
Absolutely.
Just recently, some of us in Sikkim, we were going to see land.
Okay.
And it's a very hilly terrain, Sikkim, mm-hmm. as you know very well. So we were going uphill and wintry cold. It's so cold in Sikkim. And then as we were walking uphill,
mm-hmm.
it was quite a walk. And then somebody said, oh, walking like this, I already feel quite warm now.
Uh-huh.
And one of the youth, he said a very simple thing, but then the profundity of it, you know, reflects the amount of spiritual joy that our youth, they have already derived from Bhagwan, you know. You know what he said?
Mm-hmm.
He said, so the potential to get warmed up, the potential for warmth and heat is already latent in the body, isn't it? He said.
Absolutely, yes.
So the entire potential is not from anywhere else. I still remember in Vrindavan those days, Swami once gave a beautiful definition of divinity in terms of a spider.
Mm-hmm.
And then so Swami said, Urna is a spider, and Urna Nab, Swami said Urna Nab, is the navel. It brings out the material to weave its house, its own web from its own navel.
Right.
So the spider is the material and efficient cause of this creation, of its own creation. So you should see a reflection of the divine creation in that. You also have the same potential, Swami said.
Beautiful.
So every time Swami would keep telling us that you are a fount of that potential. You are not a weakling.
Right.
So saying that I am nothing, I am a weak person, and if you are given to weaknesses, like, you know, worry is a weakness, it's one way of saying that you love your ego, Swami said. Because worry is another way of saying that you are egoistic. Because who worries? It's the ego who worries.
Absolutely.
The self doesn't worry at all. So if at all somebody worries, somebody is definitely worried. We are all the time worried. As long as there is worry, it shows the presence of my ego.
I think this is a very beautiful perspective, you know. When someone is perhaps talking about their achievements or, you know, their activities, we think that he's egoistic.
You
know, this person likes to talk so much about himself. But this is a very interesting perspective when we are saying that, I am sad, I have got too many worries, worried, poor me, I just get angry, I'm not unable to control my anger, I'm unable to control this temptation. At that time also you're egoistic, as you're saying. Wow.
So I think the different shades of seva that Swami has spoken in this passage is that manav seva is madhav seva. He says only people who have actually understood the essence of service, they will understand the meaning of that statement.
Yes.
So all of others have to, you know, we have to really work towards trying to attain that.
Can I share one story that comes to my mind
right
now?
Yes.
As I was doing my PhD, and Swami was my guide for my PhD, because, you know, no one else could have...
What a blessing.
So, I had several occasions to be with Swami.
So, what was the topic of your PhD?
I did on esoteric Buddhism, growth and development in Sikkim, during the 17th, 18th and 19th centuries.
Wow.
So that was the subject, but then that brought me so close to Bhagwan. Even at a very physical level, he used to call me most of the time and ask me about your PhD, how is it going? Because my research guide was just guiding me with my research methodology, but Swami was telling me the content.
My God.
So so many insights I got. So on one of those occasions, Swami told me a story. He said, this is a very beautiful story that you should always keep in mind. He said, during the time of Buddha, there used to be a dullard in his sangha, in his group. So group of paribrajakas, they used to be the people who would roam around like roaming mendicants. So they would be all the time following Buddha. So one of them was so stupid, so that, you know, he could never understand what the Buddha was teaching.
Right.
So every evening, Buddha used to give his discourse. in the Jeta one. Mm-hmm. And there was a prince called Jeta, and then he had gifted a huge whole orchard to Bhagwan, Buddha, and that is where he used to give his sermon.
Mm-hmm.
So this person was, because he couldn't understand what he was talking about, you know, he used to be all the time very melancholic, mm-hmm. miserable. And Ananda, who was Buddha's, Shakyamuni Buddha's cousin,
mm-hmm.
Ananda really took pity on this person, because looking at his misery, he asked the Lord, Lord Buddha, could you do something for him? Because he is all the time, you know, can you put an end to his misery? So he said that, you are the one who is miserable, not that person. He said he is miserable.
Hmm.
No, he is unable to understand whatever you teach.
Hmm.
So because of that low level of understanding, he feels very disheartened, and this is what is happening to him. He has developed a complex. So he said no. So this man, this dullard, his name was Jivaka.
Okay.
So Buddha said, I'll show you that he's the brightest among you. Then he said, Jivaka, from tomorrow you don't have to sit in my class. Like you don't have to sit and listen to my discourses. All that you need to do is just clean up the place and get things ready for the discourse.
Okay.
And as you clean, I'll give you a Maha Mantra. All that you need to say is, dust, go. And all the smell, go. Can you do that? So he said, so easy, I'll do it. Because, you know, as you dust, the dust get out, you know. And all the smell, get out, get lost, you know. So easily I can do, because I am doing it.
Correct.
So it's easy to relate. So he said, do it for 1 month. So for 1 month, he did that. And Lord Buddha said, now you have passed that grade. So the next grade, you go to that, there was a cave nearby. Get inside that cave and sit and think that you are growing horns, you know. Because everyone tells you that you are like a, you're like a bull. You don't understand anything. So why don't you prove it to the hilt? You know? Just sit there and grow horns. Can you do that? So he said that I will do that. Because you are commanding my master. Let me do that. So he went and sat there for a whole month. And then one day in the evening, just before the discourse, he said, I think Jivaka should come and join us. So from there he shouted, Jivaka, will you kindly come here? So from inside the cave, Jivaka said, I can't come out because my horn is hitting the ceiling of the cave. I'm unable to come. It's obstructing my, you know, my exit from here. So what do I do? So he said that, okay, I understand. You sit there for another 1 month and then you bring down your horns. And then once you are rid of the horns, you come out.
Okay. Very interesting.
So on, Vaishakha Purnima, Swami said, just on Vaishakha Purnima, when Lord Buddha for the last time again called him out, he said that I am coming, my master. So he came out from there, fell at the feet of Buddha, and then he attained Mahaparinirvana.
Wow.
And then he said that, look at this boy. You call him a fool. You call him stupid. Just because he doesn't know a few norms, a few things that you do in this world.
Jargon.
He doesn't confirm. Few of the jargon he doesn't understand. Do you call him? Because that is the inner potential for which you don't need any formal structured classroom.
Correct.
It's there already latent in you. By default, you have come with it. So I don't know how this thought came to me.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I should share that with you.
Horn of ignorance, you have to remove. That's
horn
all.
Of ignorance.
That's all it is. I think such a beautiful and implicit obedience too.
Implicit obedience
to the guru.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And everything is there within you.
Everything
is there within you.
Swami was, talking about different types of service in a very humorous tone. One story Swami was narrating. He said that there was a great scholar, a poet and a scholar, and who had written a book. Now there is this person who comes to his home like a journalist kind of person, and he says, oh, what a book this is. You're such a great scholar, and this is a masterpiece. I think you are also not aware, this is a masterpiece and all that. He says, yeah, I know it has come out good by the grace of God and all that. Mm-hmm. But the full credit doesn't go to me. It goes equally to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has contributed in this. And otherwise it would not have come out so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's saying, oh, very, very glad. And that person left.
Mm-hmm.
Now his wife, who had overheard this statement, she was standing behind the door. And she came out and she said, you have never lied in your life. Why did you do this now? I don't know how to write poetry. I am not a scholar. I don't know. In fact, when you were writing this book, I was not even here. I had gone to my mother's house. He says, that is the contribution. That is the seva, that is the service you have done. So Swami is saying service can be done in different ways.
Yeah. So, there is no set definition for service.
Sometimes when you go out of your way thinking that you are trying to help somebody, you are actually not helping. So you should analyze what is the best form of service and then do service what is good.
Yeah.
So it was funny.
Wow. But all said and done, service gives you the opportunity to see your own extension in everyone.
That's the point, yes.
That's the point. Ultimate point.
Ultimate point. So Swami says that as you start serving and you start believing that you're serving yourself,
slowly
you start seeing that spark of divinity in everybody. That's it.
Yes. Wow. I mean, in fact, whenever Bhagavan has talked about this feeling of oneness and this feeling of service, Swami should always give that example of how when the thorn, when a thorn pricks the leg, the eye automatically starts shedding tears. And the eye feels the pain of the leg. And, it is not as if, oh, anyway, the thorn has hit their leg, you know, why should I be bothered?
Yeah.
You know, the eye does not think, you know, all those things. And immediately the thorn has hit the leg. So, you know, the blood, wherever it is, you know, the blood reaches there. The blood does not think that, I have not done anything. You know, the foot is hurt. And, you know, why should I, you know, rush to that presence? Or, you know, there's so many things that happen in the body. Enzymes are created, you know, pain mechanisms are sort of instantly generated to deal with it. So there are a million things that happen in the body just automatically because each one feels one with it. The whole thing is just one integrated unit.
Yeah, that's what Swami calls systems thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you think from that perspective,
yes,
that integrated perspective,
mm,
because we always talked about Swami, we had Swami's darshan, but we always had Swami's darshan from our perspective.
Yes.
But, you know, looking at Swami from Swami's angle, that's what Swami said once. If you would think of Sai from Sai's perspective,
mm-hmm,
your perspective would be the most holistic one.
Mm.
Because when you look at me from your perspective, you become judgmental, he said.
Mm.
Yeah, then you ultimately become judgmental even about God.
Yes.
Swami should be like that. Swami is like this. Swami is like that, you know.
Mm.
So you start hallucinating.
Mm.
But when you look at God from the holistic perspective, the most integrated perspective, then our vision changes.
Vision changes. The whole
mindset changes.
Absolutely. In fact, one other thought that comes to mind is, you know, one practical way of doing this, when Bhagavan introduced at the end of every bhajan session, Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, you know, Swami wanted us to feel that oneness with the whole creation. In fact, on one occasion, when one brother was chanting this, of the Hyderabad youth, Swami bent down and Swami said that when you chant this, Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, there should be tears in your eyes. When you must feel that much. Otherwise, you know, it's just a mechanical thing. You're not really, you know, you're just chanting just for the sake of it. But you should really feel for this mantra.
Yes.
Every time you chant, you know, you should feel for everything around you so palpably, so strongly that, you know, if there is a pain, it should pain you 10 times.
You should mean what you are chanting.
Yes.
You should feel what you are chanting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is true for bhajans, it is true for every mantra. And It's reminded of another little anecdote. On one occasion when Bhagwan had gone to the super speciality hospital, way back, I think perhaps in the early years of the setup of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences in Puttaparthi, and you know, whenever there would be any guests, Swami would often take them and you know, show them the various departments. So on one occasion, there were a group of students who had gone to the super hospital to donate blood. So they had finished offering blood, and even as they were coming out, suddenly they heard this news that Swami is coming, Swami is coming.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought it is better they are in the blood bank rather than seen in the corridor. Swami will ask, what are you doing here? So if they are in the blood bank, then it is, you know, very well defined about the nature of why they are there. So, and to their happiness, Bhagwan stopped there and Swami came into the blood bank, and then Swami started introducing these boys to his guests, and Swami said, you know, this boy is doing PhD, this boy is doing post-graduation and all that. And then Swami asked this boy, what did you do? He said, Swami, I gave blood, Swami. And then Swami said, did you give me?
Mm.
And the boy just kept quiet. He didn't know what to answer. And Swami just left, actually. And he kept thinking, when Swami does not need blood, some patient needed blood.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Swami saying, you know, did you give me? So it seemed very strange, actually. Does really Swami need anything? Then only after many years, when he started thinking about it deeply, that is when it dawned on him that even though you say you have given that blood, did you really give it to me? Did you offer that act to me?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Did you offer that act to me? So when I asked, what did you do? Could you speak with that conviction that this act I have done only as an offering to thee?
Beautiful. Just a moment back, Prem was speaking about Nishkam Karma.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
In the Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita section.
Here, that another aspect which Swami is telling here is, he says, there are people who are not moving, you know, who are not doing action, who are just sitting, but their mind is doing all that.
Yes.
And they get, you know, all the karma comes because your mind is always active. You cannot say, I will not act, I will just sit. But your mind is all over the place. I remember a very beautiful sentence in the starting of a Trayi session. Mm-hmm. So Swami was saying, so all of you are sitting silently. Then, yes, Swami, like everybody is sitting, everybody is wondering what Swami is saying. Not this body, sir. Your body is here. But where is your mind? And then Swami made this beautiful statement. He says, what I speak for your mind. I'm speaking to your mind.
Mm.
I'm not speaking to you as the body. Because my words go and affect the mind, because the mind is the main obstacle that is causing.
Yeah.
So he says, if you have that mind centered on God, and then you perform actions, every action that you perform will become sanctified, and that karma will not stick to you. That's what Swami is saying in this. And he says that is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita.
Wow. In fact, there are so many statements of the Bhagavad Gita on this. You know, we have Nimitta Matram Bhavasavya Sachi, where, you know, you have to constantly remind yourself that you are nothing. You don't exist. You are just
instrumental.
An instrument. And then Karmanyeva Adhikaraste Mahafaleshu Kadachana. And this Karmane Chittasya Suddhe Karmane, they say, right? Then the whole reason why you do any activity is only for the purification of
chitta.
Of the chitta.
Yeah.
And I think that is what Swami is telling, that every seva, only if it is done with that intent, will become a sadhana.
Right.
And if seva does not become a sadhana, then that seva is a burden.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you attract karma. Swami says here, you know, until when one's mind is fixed on the contemplation of the Lord and is engaged in the pursuit of truth, then even if the body and the senses are busy in act of service to the world, they will not accumulate. They will not accumulate any karma.
Any karma.
So and as even if the body is not engaged in particular task and the mind will busy itself with multifarious worldly activities, such people get entangled karma even though they have seemingly not done anything. I mean, even if you have done service, but if you have not done it with your mind fixed on the Lord, then that will only add to karma. And so you are only leading to more and more bondage. So service without sadhana will only become more bondage.
Absolutely. In fact, they when they ask Swami, what is the use of doing service? Why should we do service? And how is it going to help me? What's in it for me?
Yes.
Swami, why should I do service?
Yes.
Then Swami says, suppose you earn a lot of money. You will get a big bill for the income tax. But you also have income tax deduction. So he says you have income tax deduction. He says, in my book of accounts, if you do good deeds, I will deduct little income tax. If you do bhajans, I will deduct little more income tax. Nagar Sangeetan, Nama Japa, Likita Japa, Dhyana, Seva, all this if you do, I will keep reducing the tax. The tax is the karmas that you have to go through.
Yes.
So by doing this,
so you get lot of GST deduction.
lot of deduction. But he says, even beyond that, if you have karma, you have to go through. So he says, by doing good actions, by doing service, your karma will reduce.
GST. God's seva tax.
So he says, so you do that, that tax will reduce.
That's interesting. In fact, I heard sometime back also Bhagwan mentioning that every time we do bhajans, Swami says, you know, there are a lot of acts that we commit unknowingly. We commit mistakes, you know. There could be so many insects that we could have killed. There could be so many people we could have hurt, unconsciously also.
Yeah.
And Swami says, when you do activities like bhajans and japa, you know, automatically the merit of these helps you to overcome the adverse consequences of all those acts.
Yeah, the most beautiful adage, I feel, is this Mano Seva and Madho Seva.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which Swami talks about here again.
The essence of spirituality is that.
Yeah. Every Mano Seva is Madho Seva if there is no ostentation attached to it.
Yes. In the right spirit of Seva.
If you are not feeding the ego.
Exactly. Not feeding the ego.
And then really doing it as an act of surrender. Surrendering the fruits of the action, surrendering yourself.
Yes. And I feel the greatest example of this is the huge statue that Bhagavan has erected in Prashantilam, which can be seen from any corner of Prashantilam.
Hanumanji.
Lord Hanumanji.
The tallest
example of service as sadhana.
What comes to my mind is about the Mano and Madho.
Mm-hmm.
Manava, as Swami says, is not new.
Manava.
Yes. Manava.
Yes. Not new.
The ancient one. Mm. So we are all that. So
yes.
Basically, I am the ancient one. And about Madho also he has said so many things. But one of the succinct things that Swami talks about Madhava is, apart from saying that Madhava is one who is very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
One who is filled with nectar,
mm-hmm.
and madhu.
Mm. Yes.
So, and that is Krishna.
Right.
Of course. But then he also says, Madhava also means the husband of my mother.
Oh.
It's such a beautiful description.
Yes. Yes.
And who is the mother? Mother is Pragya.
Mm-hmm.
And who is the husband of Pragya? Just anyone's guess.
Atma.
The Atma.
Yes.
So, Madhava is then saying that you are that Madhava.
Mm.
So, in my essence, in my basic essence, I am that Atma.
Beautiful.
So I am Madhava. So wow. you are the ancient one, the timeless one, and at the same time, you are Madhava, you are God, you are Krishna.
When, you know, because you're talking about Krishna, there is one very sweet story which Swami has narrated about the spirit of service. It's about the spirit of service, and he's saying, look at Lord Krishna as a small boy, how he demonstrated, how he taught to his friends the spirit of service. So he went to his mother Yashoda and he says, now, okay, bye, I'm going out. I have to take the cows for grazing. And then his mother says, oh, but I have not ordered your shoes. So if you go bare feet, you'll get hurt. And, you know, there will be thorns. There will be so many bushes. There will be rocks. There will be stones, sharp stones. It will hurt your tender feet. So why don't you just stay back for a day or two? Your shoes will get ready. Then you can go. And it's a very interesting story. So Swami says, Mother Yashoda is telling, you know, stay back out of her concern and love. Then Krishna asks her, what do you call me? And she says, you are Gopala. So, because I take the go, because I take the cows, and I am their leader, and this is the service I'm doing for them, I'm taking them out, that's why you call me Gopala. Now, if I wear shoes, you have to get shoes for all the cows.
All the cows.
says, when the cows are walking without shoes, how can you make shoes only for me?
So good.
Oh my God.
And he says, that is the spirit of service. Even the Lord, when he comes down, he lives, he
exemplifies.
He is identifying himself with the cow.
Yeah.
Lord Krishna is saying, he is one with the cow. He says, if you are getting shoes for me, you get shoes for them all the cows. When they are going out without shoes, why can't I go?
I am the leader of the cows.
I am the leader of the cows.
In fact, there is a very, very beautiful incident which is an sort of exact parallel to this in Bhagwan's life, where, you know, in old Vrindavan, you had these group of pilgrims who had come from North India, and they, from their way they were dressed, you could make out that they belonged to really economically weaker sections, but somehow they just wanted to do this pilgrimage, so they were having little bags with them, and they came into Vrindavan. And Bhagwan had already retired, and so they asked, you know, if there's any chance they can have darshan, and they said, no, this is already late and Bhagwan is not going to come out. So they're very disappointed, and they were just sitting there and thinking what to do. And suddenly Bhagwan comes out of his residence, and there is pell-mell, and Swami starts walking towards his group. And so Dr. Ravi Kumar, the current warden, you know, he rushes and he offers Bhagwan slippers, because Bhagwan was not wearing anything, and, you know, and it was hot actually, summer, on the concrete surface. And so Swami just shooed him away, and angrily actually. And Swami went to this group, and then Swami spent a good 45 minutes with them. You know, he went to each one of them. He gave them Pad Namaskaram. Then he asked for fruits. He gave them. He gave them photographs, and he gave them some other sweets. So he spent really 45 minutes with that group. And, you know, for them, of course, it was just a heaven of delight is suddenly bursting forth, manna from heaven. And then Bhagwan was walking back. And then, you know, now Ravi Kumar sir was so scared that, you know, something wrong he has done. Because the way Swami angrily sort of asked him to go, that he thought, you know, there is something really amiss, and he was very sheepishly now standing in some corner so that Swami does not even notice him, because, you know, maybe he felt he has done something wrong and Swami does not want him to be there in the front. So he was, and then when Bhagwan was coming out, Swami looked at him, and you know, with little courage he went, and then Swami said, how can I wear, did you see all those people?
Barefooted.
Is any one of them wearing slippers? How can I wear slippers when I go to them?
So that's what, every time Swami exemplified it, by precept and practice, he showed us.
Yes.
Every word that he spoke, he practiced. Definitely.
And, I mean, that's what the entire spirit of Bhagavad Gita is what was embodied in the life and and living of the avatar. And here you have Bhagavan so beautifully giving us the essence as well as the practical steps how we can, you know, go about it. I think the way Sai Prakash also mentioned what is mentioned in Ananda Dai.
Can I just add one one small instance?
Sure.
It was a very beautiful time in Vrindavan. And those days, you know, whoever wanted to ask Swami anything would carry a flower garland. And then Swami would say, "What? What do you want to ask?"
Mm-hmm.
So that was an indication that, "Swami, I have something to ask you."
Mm-hmm.
And then offer the flower garland.
Mm-hmm.
And then sit there, and if you are bold enough, you can ask.
Mm.
So one of the boys, I don't remember his name now.
Mm-hmm.
He was my senior.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Gokulam.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked Swami, "Swami, how do we know that you are God?"
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami said, "It's for you to know. How can I tell you?"
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Swami, please tell me, Swami. I am vexed by this thought. You are God, everyone tells me, but how do we know that you are God?" Then Swami said, God has these six attributes.
Attributes, yes.
And think of the attributes, and then you juxtapose me to each one of those attributes, and see if you find me wanting in any one of those attributes.
Wow.
And then Swami said this, Aishwarya, Yash, Jnana, Shri, Birya and Vairagya.
Vairagya.
Wow.
And if you compare these, each one of these attributes to me, you will find that I exemplify each one of these.
Wow.
So that is Madhava.
Yes. That is, my life is my message. Bhagwan, Shri, 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 Satya Sai Baba. Wow, I think there is, I mean, this is what we always say at the end of every session, you only scratch the surface, because you can take every line and you can go on discussing. There is so much to really share and so much to contemplate and ruminate on. But we've just sort of only set the ball rolling. And it is for all of us to see how we can sanctify our time and take these teachings into our heart and, you know, make them a part of our life and living, and derive the happiness out of it. Because Swami initially says, you know, soon you will experience happiness. Soon you will experience happiness. All you have to do is, in a spirit of brotherhood, collectively take to the path of prayer and service to others. I think that is the simplest thing to do. I mean, simplest way Bhagavan has said, if you are saying you are not happy, just do this. Take to the path of prayer and learn to serve. Because we are here only to live to love and love to live. I think that's what life is all about. Thank you so much, Sonam sir, for joining us for this session. It's really Bhagwan's will and his blessing that
it's
you could be here.
The highest blessing.
So dear listeners, with that, we have to draw the curtains on not only Vahini Satsang but the day-long Thursday Live. If you have any queries or comments, as always, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also message us on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. And we'll continue this last chapter of Prema Vahini in the coming episodes of Vahini Satsang. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.